What's up, college baseball fans? It is episode 43 of the 11.7 podcast. It is a Friday edition special, and you guys will enjoy it. What's up, college baseball fans? We have another episode ready for you today, a little Friday special. And today we want to talk about something. We want to talk about something that happened yesterday on social media. And it was kind of fun on our end. And it has to do with the Mississippi State fans who felt like we disvalued their program a little bit.
And, oh my God, over one spot. Unbelievable.
And it made it seem like we forgot to rank them, or maybe rank them in the as a two seed in a regional. But no, it was over a little bit of a controversial topic of whether they should be the number 5 national seed or number 6 national seed.
Can you believe that, dude? We're 2 weeks before Selection Sunday, and they want to argue over one spot in the name. And it's almost like they think that college baseball is not important to us. And boy, they couldn't be more wrong. So I would love to dive into this with you, Ben, because it was honestly kind of embarrassing. Like, I kind of feel like they're acting, not everyone, you know, we've interacted with plenty of great Mississippi State fans. In fact, some of them reach out to us after the show and say, hey, like, you know, I get it. We appreciate what you're doing, but you know, some people don't, but, so Ben, you kind of want to start us off with East Carolina. Yeah. We have number 5 and Mississippi State number 6. Let's go ahead and dive into that.
Yeah. So let me set the scene. So, we wouldn't be talking about this right now if it wasn't like something that took, you know, 10 minutes of our time. But yesterday it was like a 3-hour fracas of just nonstop people from Mississippi State commenting, just saying like, we don't know college baseball. Like, here are the facts. You guys don't even want to know the facts. Like, you guys are a joke, blah, blah, blah. We got called plenty of names, which we're used to. We get called names all the time. We're not scared.
We've been called plenty worse by plenty better than the internet. Yeah. Like, if you let the internet really, really get you, in 2019, like, you got some problems. So
yeah, and there's no way to win a war or a fight on the internet, so we just wanted to talk a little bit about it, a little verbal communication. And I know a lot of you guys are listening right now, so here it is. We decided to rank East Carolina one spot ahead of Mississippi State in the national rankings. Both teams get to host a regional, and both teams get to host a super regional if they advance far. Like, this is only picky between who you're going to face in Omaha if you get there.
Yeah, I would totally understand if it was like a teams that were going to play each other and in the super regional based off who gets to be home or away. But that's not even what we're talking about here. So
yeah, and so it all started with a guy who said, basically, you guys don't know your stuff because Mississippi State has more quadrant one wins than East Carolina.
They've beaten East Carolina in a midweek earlier this year. You think we don't know that?
Yeah. And so, yeah, that was our argument. That was like 80% of the arguments that we got were East Carolina lost to Mississippi State in a midweek, like head-to-head. Head-to-head matters, right? Blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you why it doesn't matter as much, in my opinion, than probably your opinion.
It's one game. And second of all, we're making projections of what the committee's going to do. So we're going to dive into that right now.
Yeah. And so the reason why the midweek game head-to-head doesn't matter as much and doesn't carry as much weight, in my opinion, opposed to other things, is that it was a one game at Mississippi State. East Carolina also played Ole Miss midweek back-to-back.
The day after,
which they beat Ole Miss and one hit them. And Mississippi State was coming off a fresh series. And I think that if you put it as a neutral site game, three-game series, East Carolina takes at least one of those games and possibly two. And so their numbers stack up. Their non-conference strength of schedule is tremendously higher than Mississippi State, who's sitting at 192, and East Carolina's at like 14.
Yeah, let me jump in on that one, because we've seen in the past that to the committee, who you schedule outside of your conference really matters. And you might say, oh, we play in the toughest conference in all the land. Well, yeah, you do, but you also might finish fourth, because you're not better than Vanderbilt, not better than Arkansas, and yeah, you swept Georgia, but as of this recording right now, you might finish in fourth place depending on how the rest of the weekend goes. And we, what we think the committee is going to do is reward a team like East Carolina, who, by the way, they're, depending on where you look, they're one spot behind each other in the RPI. Like, East Carolina's fourth, Mississippi State is third. And East Carolina's non-conference strength of schedule, like Ben mentioned, is 12th in the nation, where Mississippi State's is 192nd. So yeah, we're not exactly confident that the selection committee is going to give the third or fourth best team in the SEC as the number five host in the country. You know, we're not so confident in that. So, I mean, that's – and so we dropped them a whole spot down.
Yeah, we dropped them one spot down. And we still have them ahead of Georgia Tech and Stanford, who are looking at potentially winning their conferences. So, anyways, the bottom line is that East Carolina – we believe will win out the rest of their games. They're going to win their two games left this weekend, and they're also going to win their conference tournament, no problem, because I think they're 19-3 in their conference so far.
They are. They are.
And then we have Mississippi State, who is probably going to take care of business like they did last night against South Carolina. They won like 24-3.
24-7. 24-7. A lot of runs scored late.
Yeah, and so Mississippi State is going to sweep that series most likely. But when they get into the SEC tournament, we don't think they're going to win the tournament. They don't have the pitching depth to. And so that means that's two more losses on their resume, right? So they're going to lose two more games this year in the SEC tournament, unless somehow they win it all. They'll lose to probably Vanderbilt in the semifinals, and then Arkansas in the loser's bracket somewhere. Maybe Georgia somewhere in that tournament. But we're not projecting them to win their conference tournament or even come in the top two.
Yep.
And so the committee's going to see that and be like, how are we going to rank three SEC teams in the top four? And it's not like, honestly, we also have,
I hate to say it, but rankings aren't made out of SEC love, guys. Like that, you might love the SEC, but the committee's job is to be unbiased and neutral.
So all we're saying is that the committee is also not going to want to match up two SEC teams in a super regional like as two hosts. So by putting Mississippi State at number six, they're going to be matched up in our projections with UC Santa Barbara. And wouldn't you guys just love that, you Mississippi State fans? Like, if there's any one seed you could play in a super regional, I think UC Santa Barbara is the one seed, because you don't want to play against like Oklahoma State, Miami, North Carolina, or LSU, do you? Like, no way. And so it's actually a favorable matchup being at number six, and you guys just don't see it that way.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you just said, and I just wanted to add on that Mississippi State has only played 16 games on the road this year. They're 10-6 on the road. The committee really, we've seen in the past, favors teams, and they reward them for playing a tough non-conference strength of schedule, which Mississippi State hasn't done. It's 192nd, and for playing well on the road. And they haven't really gone on the road that much. So we're going to have them sixth instead of fifth, really splitting hairs. That's the justification for it, and I think it's more than warranted.
Yeah, so I'm glad we got that time just to explain ourselves and I guess give more than just a written, you know, written, what am I trying to say?
240 characters.
Yeah, we have 240. Yeah, we have 240 characters on Twitter to explain ourselves. And like half the time we would have three more replies before we could even put one more out. So we kind of just let it drop and just, you know, embrace the suck. We embraced everybody just kind of telling us that we sucked, and we used our own platform as a podcast, which you're all listening to explain ourselves a little bit. And hey, you know what? Like you might not agree with us, but let's be honest. Like, has Mississippi State ever won a College World Series? No. So maybe like that should be your priorities as fans, is like win a College World Series before you worry about whether you're ranked fifth or sixth. Because
I mean, feeling like you're owed something is kind of hilarious, honestly. You know, I mean, we don't think we're owed a lack of criticism. It honestly felt like a rite of passage to really get like all of Twitter just thrown on you. So it was fun.
Yeah, we wanted that. We wanted to hear everybody's opinion, because that's what's going to make us better. Like, we're not going to back down from a challenge. Like, odds are, like, I feel like head to head, like we know more about college baseball than 85-90% of fans out there. So like, you're not going to change our minds. Like we have our own facts to back ourselves up. But anyways, at the end of the day, let's just leave it at this. It's not a big deal, guys. It's a projection, number one. Number two, it's one spot in the projection. And number three, there's still a lot of baseball to be played before like it actually comes out. So like we can't predict the future, but we can predict what we think will happen. And the way we thought was going to happen was Mississippi State is going to lose at least two more games and East Carolina was going to lose zero. ultimately bumping them up one spot in the ranking. So you guys can take that however you want. You can agree with us, disagree. It doesn't matter too much to us. We don't really care. But we do like the input that you guys put in. We don't mind you guys arguing with us. We like it because it kind of just works our brain a little bit and whatever. So I'm glad we got that settled. But we're actually going to move on to a normal show nowadays. James, what do you want to talk about next? Do you want to talk about this Louisville catcher Deacon out the runner at home plate? Because I feel like that's a little bit of a lighter side to get fans a little bit less stressed right now.
100%.
So I was actually watching this game live and didn't realize this happened until about 5 minutes afterwards when I was checking Twitter. And it was a 13-0 game, so yeah, you can tell I wasn't 100% paying attention. I was kind of just on my phone tweeting and trying to defend ourselves against these Mississippi State fans, but the catcher for Louisville pulled off one of the greatest deeks I've ever seen on a baseball
field.
Total
disrespect and savage.
And the deke play, actually, I'll give James credit. He used to do it all the time at third base. He loved deking players trying not to slide at third base.
There wasn't much I was good at, but this is one I was good at.
So I have a huge appreciation for deeks on this podcast just because James was one of the best at it. Runners scoring from third base. He would have gotten there no problem if he would have been just running hard and slid. But the catcher from Louisville had his mask off, just kind of standing there in a vertical position, not looking like he's about to take a throw. There was a beautiful one hop right to him, and in one motion, grabs the ball and tags the runner right.
Dude, I wouldn't even say my favorite part wasn't that he tagged him; it was that he just I can't say that word on the air, but just owned him and slammed him to the ground, honestly. He just got a glove to the chest. The kid, that's just so embarrassing. Not only are you out, not only are you getting blown out, but you just got, taken out. Just beat down. And your boy's got to pick you up and got to explain that to Mike Martin in the dugout. That's got to be a fun conversation.
No, somebody who has to explain something is old number 37, who's the on-deck batter, who's trying to tell him to either, as a...
Yeah, what was he doing?
As an on-deck batter, it's your job to tell him whether he should slide inside, outside, stand up. He's just standing there watching the play and does no kind of verbal communication or nonverbal communication to tell him get down, bro, get slide. There is a play at the plate. This is a big deal. We're down 13-0. Let's get a run across. Come on, man.
Let's not be embarrassed on this field.
Let's not be embarrassed, man. We're gonna have to go for two at some point. So let's get the score in. But yeah, so that I bet Mike Martin was more mad at that because you can blame the runner, but you can't give him the full blame because it's not his job to be looking at the field to see if he's going to score or not. It looks like in his eyes, the catcher standing straight up, the batter on deck is not doing anything. So he's okay, good. Let's just stand up. I'm going to score and get back in this game. But no, he was totally deked and it was just hilarious. We retweeted the video. You guys go check it out.
Yeah. Well, it was great. It was great.
It was great. And another thing that's great, especially on this podcast,
we're going to stick with the catcher topic.
Yeah, we had something else happen in the same colors as the catcher, the black and red, different team though, with the Texas Tech Red Raiders.
Yep.
Texas Tech and TCU are playing a 0-0 game in the 11th, and they get the runner on third, two outs, ball in the dirt, guy swings over the top of it. TCU catcher fields it cleanly, takes a couple steps out in front of home plate. All he has to do is throw the ball to first base, and they move on to the bottom of the 11th. What happens, James?
Dude, I think the turf monster got him. Sniper got him. Boy needs Velcro cleats or something. Yeah. I don't know what to say.
Literally fell straight horizontal. There was no trying to catch himself. It was looked like he got, sniped in the back of the head. He just fell straight down, and everybody just looked at him what the hell just happened, bro? You good? Are you alive? Did you stop breathing? What happened? And it ultimately caused them to lose the game. That play, they scored a run on that play and ended up losing in, I think, the 12th inning. So
14 innings, 3-1. And that was the first run that got pushed across. So definitely changed the game 100%.
Yeah, and it just helps TCU, who's, I think they've won five straight Big 12 games. And one of their losses in the last
don't
eight.
Don't look now.
And one of their losses, because they won 2 out of 3 against West Virginia. Their one loss was a walk-off home run on Sunday. And then I believe they swept last week. I believe they swept Kansas or Kansas State. I'm looking it up right now. But they've won a lot of games recently. And they won 2 out of 3 against Kansas. They won 2 out of 3 against West Virginia. Like, so four of their last five of
they're
their
trying
last
seven, to save it.
Five of their last 7 Big 12 games. They're back in fourth place. And this is interesting. This is looking forward. It looks like the Big 12 tournament, which starts Tuesday or Wednesday, the first matchup is going to be Alek Manoah versus Nick Lodolo, two top 10 overall picks this year.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see that first round matchup. But
do you think we could just go ahead and dive into our draft talk since we're already mentioning Lodolo and Manoah and they're going to go so high?
Yeah, so James, let's talk about our boy Alek Manoah first.
All right.
For the listeners that don't follow us on Twitter, we did like an MLB comparison, player comparison for college players. They would send us in their favorite college players, and we'd give them an MLB player comparison. And for Alek Manoah, who was sent in, this one was kind of it was kind of difficult for me to come up with somebody, but I think I found two players that represent him really well. And the first one is actually not playing in MLB. He retired, I think, back in 2012, but the name that everybody knows and everybody remembers, Carlos Zambrano.
Ooh.
Big, like 6'4", 250, right-handed pitcher for the Cubs, ace of the staff, threw 300 innings a year. Very high emotion on the mound. That's kind of who Alek Manoah is. Very emotional, like pound of chest after a strikeout, like get the players pumped up in the dugout between innings, like, but also super likable guy. Another name that comes to mind, and rest in peace, but Jose Fernandez, Marlins old ace,
yep,
who passed away 2 years ago. He's another high energy guy from the right side, big body, 6'4", 6'5", good fastball, good slider. Those are two guys that Manoah is being compared to right now, and that's why he's going to hear his name the first day of the draft, probably early in round one. So he's West Virginia's ace. He's a big reason why I have West Virginia making an Omaha run. I think that they're going to win every single Friday night game, and it just sets them up to win one of the next two in every single regional, super regional, and College World Series. So that's Alek Manoah, who you guys should get familiar with because he's a big league arm. He'll be in the major leagues in less than 2-3 years. And then, James, I'm going to ask you one. How about Hunter Bishop? That's your guy right there. Hunter Bishop is your dude. I mean, you can go ahead with your comparison. I think I have a pretty good one if you don't.
Dude, I'm totally bought on the Christian Yelich comp. And I know you're fired up about it, so I'll let you take it.
Yeah, no, so I watched a side-by-side video of Christian Yelich and Hunter Bishop. And for you guys that don't know, Hunter Bishop, probably the best overall player this year. In college baseball, has like 19, 20 home runs somewhere in that.
I'm telling you, in 3 years, they're going to look back on this draft the same way as we did, the same way we should be looking back on the 2015 draft, where Andrew Benintendi is a college player of the year, and he goes 8th overall to the Boston Red Sox, and he totally is on par. You know, obviously, Alex Bregman has turned into an MVP candidate, but it's not so obvious that like Andrew Benintendi shouldn't have gone that high. And I think that's what we're going to get with Hunter Bishop, because the projections for Hunter Bishop are around the kind of the same spot as Benintendi, like as high up as, you know, 8 or 9 and as low as kind of 12 or 13, depending on where you get your draft talk. So,
yeah, right now it has Hunter Bishop going 9 to the Atlanta Braves, which could you imagine that outfield? Like if the Braves picked him, they would pick him to ultimately replace Markakis in right field. Yeah. Hunter Bishop, a big kid, 6'5", 215, 220. Brother Braden Bishop plays for the Mariners. Just a huge guy with a great left-handed swing, very similar to Christian Yelich. The power is there. The swing and miss is a little bit kind of like a red flag. But
I'm going to look into that right now. I will tell you right now.
So something that maybe will scare some people off, but no, his brother plays in the big leagues. He's a big league guy. Power just through the roof. One of the best. I think he's a 70 power guy on the 20-80 scale. And he's just been anchoring down the Arizona State lineup all year. I'm a big Hunter Bishop guy. I think he's a top 5 player in this draft. I couldn't see myself, and James can speak for himself too, I can't see myself picking any high schooler over him. I mean,
I wouldn't feel confident in it. I would not feel confident in that.
Like, why would you invest the same amount of money in a high schooler who hasn't performed on this level yet than a guy who has a major league brother, comes from one of the best hitting coaches in college baseball and with Arizona State? I mean, I think it's a no doubt. Like, Hunter Bishop will be in the major leagues, very similar to how Christian Yelich got called up so fast. So that's kind of our thought on Hunter Bishop. Another name that like a lot of people are talking about right now and probably doesn't give as get as much love as he should in college baseball is Andrew Vaughn of Cal. Like, won the Golden Spikes Award last year. It's equivalent to the Heisman Trophy. So could you imagine if there was a Heisman Trophy winner that came back for another year and didn't get any kind of, like, recognition or anything? Well, Andrew Vaughn plays way out in the West Coast and doesn't get the recognition that he needs. But this guy is like Mark McGwire Jr. or Paul Goldschmidt, like right-handed bat. The bat is so quick through the zone, but so long through the zone, kind of like Goldschmidt, where it almost looks like he's swinging.
Like an oar.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, it's almost like an oar. Like, it looks like it takes so long to get, like, from point A to point B, but it's so quick. And one of the strongest guys in this draft, the limitations on him is first base is probably his only position to play at the next level, DH, obviously. And that's why he's slotted at 5 right now to the Tigers, who in a couple years will be needing to replace guys like Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez and those type of guys. So he would fit in well in Detroit's system.
Hey Ben, let me finish that thought on Hunter Bishop. Let's just wrap that up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, his punch out rate it's 21%. That's not alarming at all. It's pretty normal. It's probably over. You know what happens is it gets overblown because when he first got on the scene, his punch outs were a lot higher. But he's reduced those as a junior, and there's really no concern there. Especially when he's walking as often as he is at 17% of the time. 21.9% punch outs, call it 22, 16.9% walks, call it 17. No concern there. Probably just needs, you know, some more bats like everybody else. So,
the swing and miss thing is something that pro guys can work with because he has the power. So you can, it's a lot easier to accelerate the not swing and miss program than accelerate the power program because. Oh. The guys that have the power, they have a little bit of an advantage going forward in pro ball.
Well, yeah, and I kind of want to touch on that with you. Like, well, power comes from how fast the ball comes off your bat, and if you just don't hit the ball hard enough, like that's not a quick fix. Like that is supposed to be why you go through, you know, 3 or 4 years of high school ball where you actually maybe you're at a place. Like if you go through 3 or 4 years of high school ball and you know you're going to be a pro ball player, like you're planning for that down the road. And so you're actually lifting weights from age 15 to 18, right? So you're developing that tool set. And then when you get into college, you're doing it for 3 more years. So if you don't have and that being in the weight room is in part where exit velocity will come from. But if you don't have that, like you can't just develop that over 6 months.
Right.
It's going to be very difficult in most cases to just. Oh, well, you know, we'll just give you, you know, 7 more miles an hour off the bat. Like, no, that's very hard to do. taking someone who punches out like slightly above average and getting him in the right minor league system, maybe with a coach who can really connect with him on a personal level, that all of a sudden that number of 22%, it drops down to 18%. And now he's a contact guy. So that's kind of the background on that.
Yeah, no, I think you're giving the fans a lot of insight that is very correct on how an MLB organization looks at it. And that's what they're going to be doing for draft day. Like, who's going to be the best fit in our system? Who can we accelerate the fastest, especially in the first round? The good thing about today's baseball world is, like, most first rounders get a chance to play in the big leagues within their first 3 years. So, like, it's not sit around and rot in the minor leagues while we go sign free agents that are 35. It's like, we want to see how these guys perform because the only way they're going to get better in the major leagues is by playing Major League Baseball.
Makes too much sense, Ben.
Makes too much sense. You're right. And the last guy that I want to do for this draft comparison that we're talking about, we kind of mentioned it a little bit on the last show with Javi Baez and Casey Martin, how that was not a good comparison and kind of got into it a little bit with a fan who sent it in. We said Whit Merrifield is good for Casey Martin. The guy just refused to believe that. He said he's the next Javi Baez. Okay, whatever, man. You can do your own comparisons and stuff like that. That's cool. But so another name that came up that kind of people were, I'm not going to say offended by, but just refused to believe.
I like this one a lot.
Is J.J. Bleday. And for the fans who maybe aren't SEC guys or Vanderbilt guys, J.J. Bleday is having an incredible year this year so far with Vanderbilt. I think he has 22 or 23 homers, like hitting well over 300 with some good power numbers.
He's an animal. He's a total monster.
He fills out the jersey well.
He has no regard for human life. Regard for human life at all.
Yeah, exactly. 6'5", 230. Threw a guy out at home plate, I think yesterday for the Kentucky game. Just an absolute cannon of an arm, left-handed, both throwing and hitting. And so who does that sound like? Well, it sounds like a young Jay Bruce, a big oversized guy with a big arm, moves around well for his size, and just has home run pop. Like the ball jumps off his bat differently than most guys. And so we said that, and everybody got offended because the name Jay Bruce in people's heads.
It's not sexy, Ben. It's not sexy
right now.
Tell me Michael Conforto. Tell me.
Yeah, that's what they were looking for, was like Conforto, Benintendi. But like he's not. He's not that type of player. He's not going to outrun anybody. He's not going to play. Like honestly, when he gets to the big leagues, he probably will be moved to first base. He won't play much outfield, but besides maybe the first couple of years there. And so we said Jay Bruce. People didn't.
I'm really on board with this pick. I love it.
And I think if you ask J.J. Bleday right now, guaranteed you can have Jay Bruce's career, get his career earnings, which is like around, I don't know, almost 100. I would say somewhere around 100 million because I know he signed a free agent deal worth like 60. And so I think if you said like you can have 300 home runs by the age of 32, like Jay Bruce does. Plus you can play another 5-6 years after that pretty easily, or you can take your own chances on making your own legacy and, trying to grind out minor league ball, then pro ball, this and that. I think J.J. Bleday takes Jay Bruce all day, every day. It shouldn't be a question in his mind.
And you know why that is? It's because Jay Bruce has been a quality major league player for over a decade. He's made three all-star games.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
He's made three All-Star games, which, by the way, it's almost impossible to do that. By the way, I feel like people don't really understand like how hard it is to succeed at the major league level. One example is Mike Zunino. The guy tore up the world in college, and he's like a scuffling hitting catcher, like being traded around. Very very difficult to succeed. But Jay Bruce, on the other hand, three-time All-Star, been top 10 in MVP voting twice. He's gonna have 350 home runs at least by the time his career is over. Like, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Go for all the SEC fans out there, go ask A.J. Reed what he would rather be doing right now. Because A.J. Reed was an all-god SEC baseball player. I mean, 12-1 on the mound his junior year with, like, a 1.5 ERA. Also hit 25 homers, drafted in the first round. Like, A.J. Reed was supposed to be the guy. Like, very similar body to Bleday, except Bleday is a little bit more muscular, a little bit more lean. But A.J. Reed has made like the Astros roster like three different years and just can't hit at that level. I think he has like four career homers, hit like 185, like tears it up in AAA. But it just shows that the jump between AAA and the major leagues is like a really big jump that not a lot of people look at. So,
dude, I'm gonna give my opinion on this. Now, I've obviously never played minor league baseball, but from talking to all the people that I talk to and the experience and information that I've gained. Is I'm going to compare the gap between AAA and the major leagues. That gap is bigger than, let's say, SoCon ball to high A or SoCon ball to double A.
Yeah.
Like the gap between AAA and the major leagues is that big. And the reason why is because if you're a pitcher, you're not facing Mookie Betts in AAA. You're not facing the Alex Bregmans in AAA. You know, like the talent is that much different. So that's how hard it is.
I mean, think about being a starting pitcher for, let's say, the Seattle Mariners right now. And the Mariners, like, they played AAA Pacific League ball somewhere. Like, they're facing
Tacoma Rainers or something.
Yeah, they're playing against other guys for, like, the Fresno Grizzlies, Round Rock Express, those type of teams, right? Well, you're not going to get to start your game. You're not getting George Springer, Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, Michael Brantley, Yuli Gurriel, Carlos Correa, 1-6, buddy. Like, that's what inflates ERAs in the major leagues. It's like, oh, like, you could be facing guys, you know, John Smith, who played at Penn State, and then you had Domingo Ayala, who played
I'll give you a perfect example. Like, Sandy Leone is a catcher for my favorite team, the Red Sox, and he goes up and down all the time. And when he goes down, guess where he hits? He hits 3, 4, or 5 for the Pawtucket, for the Paw Sox. Like, that ain't what you get in the major league. So all that is to say, like, when we give comparisons for Jay Bruce to J.J. Bleday, like, it's
difficult. That's a huge compliment. That's a huge compliment. I think that people are just being so close-minded. Like, they wanted us to say, like, Anthony Rizzo or somebody like a superstar. And it's like, odds are J.J. Bleday probably won't be a superstar. Like, I don't know if he'll have a better career than Andrew Benintendi. I really
By
don't.
Definition, that's what superstar means. Like, yeah. Not normal. Not normal, normal at all.
I mean, how many SEC superstars are there out there? I mean, there's Alex Bregman, who I consider a superstar.
Yeah.
Like, I guess David Price is one. Any kind of Vanderbilt pitcher, Walker Buehler, Sonny
it's
Gray.
It's hard,
like,
guys.
All those,
it's so hard.
Right. But, like, you see Carson Fulmer, you know, barely making any big league rosters ever, who was another SEC superstar. Everybody talked about Carson Fulmer for Vanderbilt. Tyler Beattie's another name. Tyler Beattie was Vanderbilt's ace the year they won the World Series. Like, he got rocked his first major league start against, like, the Reds. And it just shows that it's completely different. So, yeah, don't expect us to say, like, Mike Trout whenever we want to give a player comparison. Like, we're trying to give accurate names. We're not trying to put Casey Martin in the same category as Javi Baez.
Believe it or not, we're not just doing this to grow followers on a Twitter page. Like, that kind of defeats the purpose.
We care too much about this to be, like, just making a fool of ourselves.
Prisoner of the moment and just saying what people want to hear. But I want to kind of finish up this draft talk segment. So obviously Adley Rutschman's being considered to go 1-1, but depends on who you talk to, because the Orioles hold the first overall pick. And one of the strategies involved in the draft is going for as much value as you can early, because you want to save some money so you can assign that money to other guys and maybe get a deeper draft class. And the theory out there right now, word on the street, is that Andrew Vaughn might be willing to go for considerably less than Adley Rutschman. And do you make that trade? You know, do you save $2.5 million to go pick up a guy in the third or fourth round that you really like and change the depth of your draft class? So that's something that might be happening, Ben. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think this year it's a clear cut. Like, you got to take Adley Rutschman no matter what his asking price is. I mean, the guy's hitting over 400 in May. Like, his walk to strikeout ratio is like 66 to 20.
Dude, catchers scare me, though. I don't know why, but catchers scare
me.
Yeah,
but, like, this is the closest thing we've seen to Buster Posey at the college level.
Yeah.
Like, Buster Posey, All-American at Florida State, just the game was so easy to him. There was nothing flashy about him. He was almost a champion. Like, the guy, like, Adley Rutschman's already won a national championship. He was the anchor behind Team USA this summer. He's exactly like who will become a face of a franchise. And a team like the Orioles has the option to play him at first base and DH as well. So it's not like he's going to the Mets where he's going to play, you know, catcher only. He can play two other positions. To save his legs. He's a switch hitter too. Like, how many switch hitting catchers who are superstars are out there? Like, not many.
That's a good point. Though I don't know, man. The catcher position is just so weak. It just makes me wonder, like, why is that a thing? Like, Adley Rutschman, like, doesn't contribute to that, but it seems like it's been a trend. I don't know.
Right. So, like, think about it like this, James. The catcher position in the MLB is so weak, right? Like, there's very few guys who are noticeable anymore. But like, if it's so weak, like, wouldn't you want to have the best guy out there?
Oh, yeah. No.
Like to say, like, oh, we 100%. Have the best catcher in the major leagues. Like, let's say 4 years from now, he's the best catcher in the major leagues. Like, okay, we have this. We don't have to worry about calling guys up back and forth from AAA. We don't have to worry about signing a free agent. Like, we can put him in the middle of the order, and we can sign free agents around him and develop other guys. Because it's much easier to find an all-star outfielder than it is an all-star catcher.
That is facts. That is facts.
So I think he's a can't-miss guy. Unless there's something alarming about him that doesn't go out to public, I think he is the guy you got to get. He seems like a well-prioritized player. Looks like a nice guy. Sounds like a nice guy in interviews. But Rutschman's my guy. Like, if I'm the Orioles, he's already wearing black and orange in college. Like, another catcher that wears black and orange right now is Buster Posey, who any team would have loved to have in 2010 to 2015. That's the type of guy that wins you World Series because you can build around him. Like, that's what I'm saying.
You know, Ben, speaking of the World Series, let's dive into these college World Series numbers, because we kind of got off on a nice tangent the other day about which of these national seeds are going to make it and, you know, being too overconfident in them. So we did the numbers. Isn't that right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And I think this tied in perfectly to what we were talking about in the beginning of the show. But yeah, basically what we did was we ran the numbers to see, like, what percentage of national seeds ended up making it to Omaha. So eight teams go to Omaha. Eight teams are national seeds who are guaranteed to host a super regional if they get there. And so, James, what did the numbers spit out to be for like the last 6 years?
So we ended up noticing that 21 of the 48 national seeds in the last 6 years have ended up going to Omaha. So what that basically means, and when Ben and I asked this question, like, do you like Mississippi State or the field in those and the other seven teams to take them down all the way to Omaha from your regional to the other regional and a super regional matchup? You know, do you like Mississippi State or the field? Do you like Arkansas or the field? What it basically means is it's a coin flip, and it even errs on the side of the field, you know, to getting to Omaha. So that's definitely something interesting to look forward to, see how it plays out this year. And some years there's more teams than normal, and some years there's less. I think 2013, only two of the eight national seeds made it to Omaha. So don't be so confident they're going to make it. It's hard. It's very hard.
It's hard to win that many games at the end of the year after winning so many games in the beginning of the year. Because like the way that college baseball works for the most part is teams get hot, teams get cold, they play good baseball, they play bad baseball. And the teams who win a lot of games throughout the course of the 56-game schedule, like whenever they're playing bad baseball, they're usually playing against bad teams. And like they can still win those games. And so getting hot to win those last, you know, three games in a regional, two in a super regional, like it's tough to do, because what you start doing is counting down innings, you start counting down outs, like, okay, we have to win this amount of, you know, this amount of games and this amount of innings or we lose.
I think you hit the nail on the head by saying that, like, so teams go through hot and cold spells and you don't know when it's going to happen. And in the regular season, if you're Mississippi State and you play a non-conference strength of schedule, 192, like, you can play your C-plus baseball game and still win.
And still win,
other,
right.
Because the other team, if they're, you know, if their RPI, if their true talent level is like 200th in the nation, like, they got to play their A-plus game just to stay in the same field as you. But, you know, in these regionals with the frontline arms going, when they match up with these big teams, like, chances are, like, you're not going to face the bad pitchers. And if you don't bring your, you know, A game, anything can happen. And that's what shows up in the numbers of, you know, 43% of top eight seeds making it to Omaha, you know, since in the BB Corps era. Like, it's really difficult. If you play bad baseball at the wrong time, like, you're going home.
Yeah. And so since you're playing against better teams, whenever, like, let's say you get cold in the regional, like, you're playing against better teams than what you're used to. Like, the two seed in the regional won the A Sun, like Liberty. Let's say Liberty's your two seed, which probably won't happen, but if Liberty's playing good baseball, they just win their conference tournament, they're hot, and you're cold right now, like, throw the records out the window. Like, it's about who can win that one 9-inning game. And if you win that 9-inning game, it sets up the other team for failure, because now they have to win not only one more game to get to the finals of the regional, but you also have to beat Liberty twice. And like, that's where bids get stolen into super regionals, is just one bad game in the second round of the regional. And then it makes the other team have to win three more versus you only winning one.
Yeah.
Not to say that the other team is better or worse than Liberty, because they're probably not over a course of a season, but at that particular time, it comes down to one game. And
now you get 9 innings, you get, you know, four, Casey Martin gets 4 at-bats, and it's rough. You're like, wait, we're really good. Like, let the sample size increase and it'll play itself out. It's like, this is the playoffs.
And the another thing is, like, sometimes errors happen. If you're on a new field, or like you're playing against a different type of team, like, one error can change the whole game. Think about it. Like, if you're, let's say, top of the first inning, you're playing against a team and the one error leads to 4 runs, you're down 4-0. You haven't even batted yet in your own region. Yeah. Like, that's some scary stuff. So, basically, that's what we wanted to talk about with how national seeds, like, it's not everything. It's not like, I mean, it's probably equivalent to the NCAA basketball tournament, where you don't always see 1 and 2 seeds in the Elite Eight, Final Four. Like, they slip up in a 40-minute game, and boom, they're out. And you have teams like a 9 seed that's just playing good basketball. You see George Mason, who wins the Colonial Conference in basketball, and then finds himself in the Final Four, because they're clicking on all cylinders, they're making their shots. And like, if you're making your shots in college basketball, you're hitting 3-pointers, like, you're not going to be beat. You're shooting 70% like George Mason did. Like, you can't compete with that. So that's what happens usually. Usually a team gets down pretty early in the regional. Like, they give up like a 5-run inning, And then they're just like, uh-oh, we only have five innings to score five runs. Let's try to hit home runs. And we've already done this in earlier shows, but home runs don't play in the regional, super regional level. Like, the field's just, I don't know why, but home run numbers are always down. Better pitching, I don't know. Like, I think
it has to do with the pitching, and it's definitely the pitching. Like, the sample of home runs is different because you're not getting the Longwood Lancers pitching staff sample in the home run numbers, right? So that's why home runs don't play as much in regionals. But what does play are superstar players, and they can hit home runs. So there's a little caveat to that.
Right. And so I guess we can transition on from that, because there's a topic that I've really been wanting to talk about, and it's the Texas Longhorns. Did we already talk about that? I feel like we almost did early in the show, but I guess it's better to save it for later, because we're about to just make fun of probably the most storied franchise, and I mean, not franchise, story program in college baseball. The Texas Longhorns, who we had our fans vote for us like the second or third episode on a team that we were going to root against all year, which we have. We've rooted against the Longhorns, and it's gotten so bad that, like, we found ourselves rooting for them at the end of the year because it was, like, embarrassing. It was embarrassing to see how bad they were. They get swept by Kansas. They're about to finish in last place in the Big 12, resulting in not even an invitation to the Big 12 tournament.
Wild. Who would have thought?
They have more academic all-Big 12 players on their team than they have Big 12 wins. This is a program that was supposed to bounce back this year and be an Omaha contender, national championship contender. Baseball America had them ranked in the top five until like April, even though they lost like 13 games. They were like 15-13, and Baseball America had them fifth. It was just a joke. But they have officially been eliminated from Big 12 play. They had to sweep Oklahoma and hope Kansas lost twice to Kansas State. But nope. Texas went ahead and lost the first two to Oklahoma just to eliminate themselves. Not a good look for David Pierce over there at Texas.
We know David Hamilton went down before the season even started, but one guy can't be the difference between you making the conference tournament and not. That just can't happen.
Right. And David Pierce has got to be a little nervous right now, because that's the same program that pushed out Hall of Fame, one of the best coaches ever, Augie Garrido, out of the program after one bad year. If you're David Pierce, you got to just kind of look around and say, like, what happened? Like, looking all the way back to October when they first got started with fall ball, him probably thinking, okay, what do we have to do to get to Omaha? What do we have to do to get to Omaha? What do we have to do to win the Big 12? Well, like, it's kind of hit him right in the face now, and you can see it in some of his expressions on TV, just looking lost. Like, who are these guys that are playing for me? And, like, why aren't we winning games? They didn't even get invited to the Big 12 tournament, James. Like, how much worse does it get? Is there any kind of worse season they could have had?
No. I mean, geez, I'm looking at their schedule. They've only won, like, two of their last 16 games. It's unreal.
So bad, dude. And, I mean, maybe next year it'll be a little bit better. But, like, we were rooting against them all year, but we thought they were talented. Like, we broke them down, like, the second episode. Like, hey, these are the guys that are good. These are the guys who are going to have to play big parts for them. And one of them ended up getting hurt with David Hamilton. But, man, like, nobody in college baseball could have predicted this. In fact, I think more people would have predicted I don't know how to say this. Basically, people would have said Texas has a better chance of winning the national championship than not making their conference tournament.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm looking through the numbers right now, and they're a 500 team. Like, they're, as of this show, they're 26-26. Or I think they're losing a game, getting killed right now. So they'll be 26-27. But they just, when what that means, you're just mediocre, man. You don't have any special arms, or not enough of them to make a real difference. You know, it's not translating from paper. And they just don't have any special bats. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers right now. There's not, you know, most college baseball teams around the country, they've just got some otherworldly players that are really pulling the slack for everybody else. And they just don't have that. Obviously, David Hamilton was a guy, but, you know, like I just said a minute ago, you're going to need more than one. So it's real. I'm disappointed. I like seeing them in the playoffs. It's always more fun.
Yeah, me too. Like, in this jinx that we had on them, where we were rooting against them, the 11.7 jinx is real. So if you're a team that makes us mad, like, we're just going to put the jinx on you for the rest of the time. So For all you Mississippi State fans, Ole Miss fans out there who challenge us, just don't challenge us anymore. I'm just kidding. But the jinx is real. The fans put the jinx on them. We rooted against them all year. It worked. I'm sorry about it. Who's going to be next year? You guys should be worried. You guys should be really worried for your programs. But anyways, James, the last thing that we got to do before we get off the show, let's talk a little bit about what do you want to do? Scores, or you want to
do? Let's recap the scores on this Friday.
This is the last Friday of the regular season. This time next week, we're going to be deep into conference tournament play, maybe projecting some steals of bids for the NCAA tournament, because maybe some of the favorites will be out. This time next week, there will be some favorites in the conference tournament who've already been
awarded. I'm making a prediction right now. This time next week, we're going to be doing a show and being completely flustered by all the madness that is going on.
Bring it on, man. I want it. I want all of that.
I wanted to. So go ahead. You want to hit the fans with some scores? You want to start that off for us?
Yeah, I got you. So yesterday I watched a lot of college baseball, and it was about 7 or 8 games I was flipping through. One of the games that kind of stood out to me was Pitt versus Georgia Tech. I started watching that game, and Pitt was up by, I think, 6 or 7 in the first inning or second inning. It was late. And what Georgia Tech did was they came back and won the game because of guys like Kyle McCann and who ended up
Tristan
hitting like
English.
Tristan English. Kyle McCann ended up hitting like his 23rd homer of the year. The guy is just a freak. And so that was a big win for Georgia Tech, because right now they're battling with Louisville for the ACC title. And Pitt's already been eliminated, so these games mean nothing to them. And it really just surprised me. Like, I turned the game on, and Pitt was up, I think, 6-0. And it was bad. And so that was one of the games that I watched a majority of it. The other one we talked about was Louisville and Florida State. I was really pumped to see what kind of Florida State jumped out there, because, I mean, they've been a roller coaster all year.
Let's
not shy away from that. And what they did was prove me right. They lose 14-1 to Louisville. It should have been 14-2, but we talked about that play at home plate where the Louisville guy deked him out. How about this game, though? This is the game that really, really jumped out to me while I was watching it. So Vanderbilt and Kentucky play. And I know you know about this game, James, because
this was nuts, absolute chaos.
Because in the top of the fourth inning, Vanderbilt found themselves up 9-0 on a Friday night or Thursday night of this week. 9-0 against one of the worst teams in the SEC, who's 7-21. And Kentucky roars back. They get 2, 3, and 5 to put themselves up 10-9 going into the eighth inning. What does Vanderbilt do? They score 7 unanswered to win 16-10. 30 combined hits between the two teams, 26 combined runs. There was a rain delay in the middle of it, which I guess it was right after the rain delay that Vanderbilt came back out. So not to say that if the rain delay didn't happen, Vanderbilt would have lost, but it looks like that. Like, Kentucky had all the momentum, then a huge rain delay happened, and boom, they lose the game. So that was one of the games that was just completely crazy to me. The other one, I mean, we can talk about how Mississippi State put up 2 or 3 touchdowns and a field goal against South Carolina.
South Carolina's had a lost season.
Oh my gosh. So they came out to a 2-0 lead, and everything was going great, and then there was just like 8 walks in a row, and they singled them to death, and it just got ugly at the end of the game. LSU went 7-1 against Auburn. LSU really needed to win this game to have their hosting, I guess, resume up to par. And they did. They won this game. I think if they win one more game this weekend and they win at least 1 or 2 in the SEC tournament, they're a lock to be hosting down in Baton Rouge. Probably the biggest must win of all of the games yesterday was Florida over Missouri.
Dude, you're not wrong.
Because if Florida loses to Missouri, they would drop to like 11-18 in conference, something like that. And it was close. And there was actually the benches cleared for a little bit over a play at home plate. There was a sack bunt back to the pitcher, a safety squeeze. Guy slides in and I guess hits the catcher a little bit. And they were pushing and shoving each other around for about 30 seconds. And benches cleared, and they cleared it up pretty quick. But
I love that, though.
Yeah,
I've seen Florida a couple of times this season get unhappy with the way teams have done things. So I'm not surprised that they're involved in the middle of something.
But that's what I want to see out of that team. I want to see a little fight, because we've seen them lay down multiple times this year and just give games away. They fought back, showed some emotion. They won on Friday night. Hey, if they win the next two games, they're at 13 SEC wins, and they can get a couple more in the SEC tournament. Like, they're getting in with the RPI of like 30.
Dude, I'm telling you, they're going to be the nastiest three seed in the history of eternity.
Dude, no, like, seriously, like, if you're a two seed and you get matched up with Florida as a three seed, like, that is the biggest unfair disadvantage I've ever seen.
I feel like that doesn't happen in college basketball. I'm probably wrong. Like, I'm sure Syracuse has been an 11 matched up, like, some five seed, like I don't know my basketball well enough, like Davidson or something. But if Florida ends up as a three seed, that's going to be such a travesty to that regional.
I know. It's just going to throw every, because I think they instantly become the favorite, which is so sad because they would be at a non-SEC regional host.
Yep.
So they don't have to worry about playing Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vandy, any of those teams. Like that, I think they instantly become a three seed favorite. Like,
has been in their plan all year long.
I'm telling you, I think I called it like halfway through the year. Like, Florida's going to suck until May, and then May's going to come around, and they're going to start winning games, and people are going to be like, oh, man, like, you guys did it. You let them in the tournament, now they're in Omaha. Like, gosh dang it. But anyways, moving on with some scores. We'll do a couple more before we get off. Oklahoma State just beats the ever-living crap out of Baylor. 16-4.
Thank God.
I think Oklahoma State's the best team in the Big 12. I'm convinced by it. They are just the hottest team right now, swinging the bat. The pitching looks great. They're going to host a regional, James, so get ready for a regional in Stillwater.
Hell yeah.
With a two seed of, I don't know, maybe.
It's going to be a good one. They're going to be a lower host. I think you'd see maybe Dallas Baptist, perhaps.
Dallas Baptist could definitely end up there. So Oklahoma State, I think, is going to win the Big 12. And the last game I want to talk about is, let's see, I got a lot to choose from. I mean, maybe, oh, how about North Carolina and North Carolina State, both battling for number one seed in the ACC.
This game
started out all in UNC's favor. They're at home. And NC State kind of made it interesting at the end of the game. So that's a series that I think NC State really needs to win. I mean, sorry, North Carolina really needs to win because they're on the verge of hosting. And they've won game one. So if they win 2 and 3, I think they're a lock. If they sweep NC State to host, also they can do some damage in Durham for the ACC tournament.
I want these tournaments to start now.
There is a conference tournament going on right now.
The MEAC is.
Everybody knows we're big MEAC fans over here.
Yeah. We've got season tickets.
Season tickets to all the games. But anyways, James, we need to wrap it up. We're about an hour long, so we'll let the fans go. You guys come listen to us on Sunday night. We might do a Saturday night podcast. I don't know. We're working on the schedule just because of the way that conference tournaments start up.
Yep.
But anyways, thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back sometime this weekend. Just follow us on social media, and we'll let you know everything you need to.